Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here, very excited for what we are about to do today because I am already looking at the schedule, trying to figure out what we're going to do with a new season of Survivor on the horizon. And I reached out to somebody who is very high up on the list of my guests for the new season. And I reached out to Natalie Cole and I said, hey, Natalie, will you do me the honor to come on with me in Survivor 38? And Natalie said, hey, we still have some unfinished business from Survivor 37. And so, without further ado, I present to you, we are not at Survivor 38 yet. We are back talking Survivor 37, and it is my pleasure to welcome in the great Natalie Cole. Natalie, how are you?
I'm great, Rob. How are you?
I'm very excited. This is very fun. This is very fun to get to catch up with you. And, you know, I've been looking forward to talking with you. And I felt like, okay, well, let me roll out the red carpet in season 38. But I understand that you want to still talk about season 37. And I feel like that the reason that we have this podcast is so people can share their stories about what went on. And so I'm very happy to have that opportunity to talk to you today.
Yes. And it's not only me who wants to talk about 37, David and Goliath. It is the fans, because I still get a lot of questions. Yes. I get a lot of direct hits on just various questions about my experiences out there. And I actually haven't shared a whole lot. Most of what I've shared has just been little snippets of information. So I think this conversation is well overdue, and I'm honored to be your guest today. So yes, Let's get to it.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk with us, because I feel like that you're in such a unique position where you went out there and then you had people who loved you, but then you also, you know, got hate from people who didn't like you. So I totally get that you feel misunderstood in terms of your time out there on Survivor.
Well, I actually see both sides of it, Rob. I see why some people love me. I mean, how could you not, right?
That's right.
But I also see why some people didn't like me, because, in fact, I was very shocked when I came off and had this huge fan base that loved me. And I thought, how could they love me? I look so ugly out there. So I get both sides of it. But I think for those who hate me, and for some of the reasons that I can see that they have come to that realization that they didn't care for me as a character, there's some stuff that they really didn't get to see. So, and of course, they can't show everything. The big thing, Rob, is the edit, my narrative. Yeah. People have heard me kind of make little innuendos or indirect statements about not being happy about my edit. And I want to be clear today about my thinking on the edit. It's very difficult to give sound bites on this topic, as there is not enough time to kind of, you know, elaborate and give clarity on what I'm thinking. And to the point, all I've been able to do is give sound bites. Mm-hmm. So someone said one of your questions was they understood that I was hurt at the reunion. No, I wasn't hurt. I was disappointed, because I love the game of Survivor. I always knew from season one that I would be on Survivor, even though I never tried until recently. I always knew. And so to finally get there, surreal, to be out there and to be in that space and doing exactly what I wanted to do, I was disappointed that I couldn't, that my character was developed around a person who I'll call Jay. And I think it kind of snowballed into a character that was not as pleasant, because I was always in the defensive position. Mm-hmm. What most people don't understand is I was dealing with a daily barrage of insults and bullying from him. And I really felt disrespected, and I'm not a person to be disrespected. Mm-hmm. That's not how I carry myself. That's not how I treat other people. So I was like shocked. So it ended up, I felt battered and abused. And what you saw out there was me attempting to defend myself against this evil person.
Yeah. Can we start with the reunion where Jeff asked you about, you know, that he had said that he felt like that he was offended that you didn't feel like that the show got you right, and then was asked everybody, does anybody else feel this way? And you seem disappointed that nobody else stood up and said, you know what, that Natalie is right, that, you know, you guys didn't get me right either.
Well, there were a few people who had the conversation. So trust me, mm-hmm. they were just too chicken shit to stand up to what they believed. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I talked to, you know, hundreds of people that played the show. Nobody feels like that they got it right with, like, hey, that's not what happened to me. You know, this was a different version of the events.
Well, some people are just afraid to come out with it. And people are so, you know, like, kind of fear Jeff, and he's got the power to make the decision whether you play again or not. Most of the people up there want to play again, so they're afraid to really speak up. And I don't want to impact the show negatively myself, but I also have a priority to be true to me. I was true to me the entire time on the island. That was one of the things that people said they loved about me, because I was just doing me. Mm-hmm. So it was a natural thing for me to speak up and say, I wasn't happy about it. Now, here's the thing. What they showed, most of the stuff happened, obviously. Some of the stuff happened and was placed out of order. So when it's out of context, it can have an entirely different meaning. And so I found that that happened on several fronts. For instance, Everything About Me Speaks Power. I was explaining how I know that I have a certain presence. I've had it since I was a child. I'll walk in a room and I give off this air. I don't do it deliberately, but it is my height. It's my size. It's my tone of voice. It's my look. And people have described me as take no prisoners and don't play. She don't play. All of these different things based on just the outer image. And then when I speak, my voice kind of speaks to a very strong, direct, you know, not only my vocal variety, but also my word selection. So it's something that's developed over decades, okay, that mm-hmm. I've never really tried to change it, but I've tried to soften it, you know, from sitting down when I'm speaking with my staff or, you know, making sure people, but I also speak in bullet points sometimes, and that kind of works against me. And it's because I'm always so busy doing so much. And so I try to do a snapshot. And, you know, so everything about me speaks power. So therefore, I want to kind of downplay that on the island. I want to soften the edges. I use it as, and I said, this has followed me forever. So I've been working on it for years. And guess what? That's the thing that was shown. Everything about me speaks power, which sounds very egotistical, you know, and that was not in the context in which I spoke it. So things like that happened a few times. Mm-hmm. And, it is what it is. So, yeah, did the things happen out there? Yes. But what in what context, and what did I mean by whatever it was I said, and who was it really to? Because you had some voiceover stuff that was happening that was, you know, it was put where it fit the narrative and not necessarily at the moment in which I spoke it.
Yeah. I actually, I pulled a clip of you that our introduction to you on the show, and I think that that's actually the same quote that you're talking about. If you don't mind, let me play this. This is how we were introduced to you on the show.
Yep. I've been amazing in business. Everything I touch turns to gold. I am a publisher and CEO of the largest black newspaper on the West Coast. I'm a proven leader. I've had people who literally would take a bullet for me.
Okay, so it's not the same exact quote, but it's similar in tone.
It is. And let me say this. Everything I touch turns to gold. I like that one because I said that about David and Goliath. Mm-hmm. And it turned to gold. And I said that to Jeff before I left the island.
Oh, the season.
Yeah, this is a kick-ass season. Yeah, everything I touch turned to gold was something else. But I'm saying it's applicable to David and Goliath because I think we really had a great, great season. I'm so proud of the season. So let's be clear about that. Even though I wasn't like just, you know, curling my toes and waiting for my next move as the season aired, I did appreciate the season and what we brought to the game of Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody did take a bullet for me.
Yeah, but that's why I wanted to ask you that in that quote, you said that people would literally take a bullet for you. Is this a true story? This is somebody said I would take a bullet for you, or somebody got shot?
No. What I'm saying is that I was so good to people down through the years, taking care of my staff. Because when you work in a big corporate environment, I come from the LA Times.
Yeah.
I had, 400 or so people. I lose count. I think 400 or so staff level people who worked for me, 10 or so managers, 6 or so supervisors, 5 or 6 different offices that reported up through me. That what I did was, and I did a really great job of taking care of people before they even knew they needed help.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be raises, promotions, reassignments, you can work at this office versus that office because I can do that. I mean, I just really looked out for people from afar, and people respected and appreciated that so much. And so it's just a figure of speech that someone would take a bullet for me, because I actually just cut out a lot of the red tape that you find so often in corporate America as it related to the 500 or 600 people in my organization. I had their back. And so there was never this anti-management thing about me, because they knew, oh, my God, I'm on Natalie's team. You want to be on my team.
Yeah.
So that's what I meant by that statement. And it's kind of a cocky statement. I admit that 100%.
Yeah.
But that's what I said.
A lot of the players on your tribe seem to not really embrace the idea of that we're the Goliaths. Did it bother you at all to be put on the tribe and then labeled as a Goliath?
Well, you know what? It's so interesting that as the tribe was being known to us, I said, oh, my God, this is like a David and Goliath. They can't put us together like this. Really, before it released, before he let down the flag to show us it was David and Goliath, I had said to, whispering, I can't believe this. Look at us and look at them. I came up as a David.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually relate to both sides. And in some cases, I still feel like a David today because I'm always in the grind.
Yeah.
I used to tell my kids, you work really hard on the front end so you can lay back a little bit on the back end. One of my kids pointed out maybe 7 or 8, 10 years ago, well, Mom, you're still in the grind and you're still working hard on the back end. Well, it's because I choose to.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that it's interesting that I am considered a Goliath today. And I do have a Goliath attitude in terms of big, bold, fearless. Don't take much shit, just like you found when, Jay was approaching me. I do what I want to do, because guess what? That's what we all should be doing, living our lives to the maximum, whatever that means. I mean, some of my business associates think I lost my damn mind to be out there on the Survivor Island. A couple call me. I ran into one friend and she laughed for 5 minutes before she could say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because she couldn't believe that I had, I'm out there on Survivor. But see, that's all about whatever your dreams are. Everybody's not supposed to understand your dream or my dream. As long as I get it, and that's really where I want to be, that's where I'm headed. So, yeah, I was a Goliath out there, and I do feel that there were a couple of people who weren't Goliath in mentality. And see, and that was my attitude, too. You could beat me, but then you're going to really have to beat me. Mm-hmm. Because mentally, I was as strong as anybody out there, if not stronger. In fact, there were a few that were a lot less stronger than myself. But that's the beauty of the game.
It seemed like the person that I know that you were tight with out there, that you had a good relationship with John, right? And he was another person who also sort of embraced that role of being a Goliath. You feel like that there's something to that, that people that were ready to act like a Goliath were people that you were on the same page with?
Well, John, okay, so what they showed was that John tried to help me. What happened was on the first day, I went to John and said, look, I need you to help me get through the first half, and I'm going to have your back without fail on the second half, because you're likely going to be targeted for your athleticism. You can trust me. John and I made a commitment the first day, and I think his first relationship. I bounced to Dan and did the same thing. Dan and I had a commitment the first day, and it was unwavering in my thinking. I think both of them stayed true to their word, and I was prepared to stay true to mine, because that's one thing I did. I played an honest game. Then I said, well, let me bring in Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I said that Jay. Name. Damn it. What the? Anyway, I go to him, and the first thing, I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
You're the oldest. No, he said, you and I are the oldest, and we're both black. They're going to take either you out or me out, and it ain't going to be me.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me very early in the game that it's either he or I, and it's not going to be him. And guess what? He played to that to a T. His whole game became his obsession with Natalie Cole.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that in his exit interview, he only spoke about me. In his final tribal council, I wanted so badly to tell him, dude, it's actually your funeral today. And you're right. We're all here. Because he even got the count wrong. But I was holding my peace. And let me talk about that for a moment, because I want to tell you the real story behind how Jay was voted out. Everybody says, oh, Angelina tried to help Natalie, blah, blah, blah. Well, just in the game of Survivor, you have to go and position things to people to let them know that it really is their benefit. And incidentally, it's going to happen to help me as well. And that's what I did with both Angelina and John to get them to switch the vote from me to Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really about Jay viciously running his mouth about what he thought was going on with Angelina and John, which even if it was, it's none of his business. And if it wasn't, why make up a vicious lie?
Mm-hmm.
This is a lose-lose situation. It's just not something you do. You're playing with people's lives. And so I said to John, well, John, what are you going to do? Well, what can we do? John, we need to vote him out, and it needs to be unanimous, and we need to get everybody together, because you're about to get married. You don't want this out there. That's horrible that he would say that. John said, okay, I think I could get, and I thought, John, it's not going to move this fast like I needed to move. So I went over to Angelina. Your husband is a Marine. He's fighting for our country. How can you let this stand? You cannot let this stand. We would send a clear message by unanimously voting him out. And we have to do this, because if not, it's just such an ugly thing. She dropped a tear at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew they were going to support that position. Yeah, it benefited me, but I really kind of yanked the chain and said, you got to do something. And I put the fire into both of them. And then I watched over the next 2 to 2.5 to 3 hours that plan unfold. And I saw when they hit up Mike, and I saw when they hit up Natalia. Natalia was livid.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched things the rest of that day, and I knew I had the numbers, because just before we went to tribal, two people approached me and said they want to work with me, and they wanted to blindside somebody else that night. And would I go along with them? And I was not having it, because I wanted Jay out, but I just played it off and said, you don't want to blindside so-and-so tonight, because we're about to go, we're going to merge, and you're not going to have a chance to do damage control. And do you want that kind of thing out there? And they both said, you're right, you're right, you're right. And they turned around and walked off. Now, these two were joined at the hip. I told people day one they were joined, and nobody could ever see it or believe it. And it doesn't come out until later in the game that they are, in fact, allies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story behind Jay being voted out. So I went into tribal, even though I packed my stuff, and he was sneaking around in my bag to see if I packed everything. He even came over and asked for my jacket. It took everything for me not to just jump up and drop kick him right there.
Right. And he really got the whole jacket thing started, right?
Yeah, Angelina was on one for most of the game. But yeah, he got it started because he asked for the jacket. I didn't know at the time, but he went over and told Allison and somebody else, yeah, I even asked for her jacket. And the way he did it, it was so transparent. I'm not saying you're going to be the one tonight, but if you are, he was so cute and nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know you just have been an absolute asshole for the most of this game, and now you're being nice? Get the... So anyway, like I said, I wanted to jump up and drop kick him, but the cameras were rolling, right. So I didn't. And I just said, you're going to get yours tonight, buddy. And it happened.
Okay. Did the relationship ever improve outside of the game, or was there always this tension between you and Jay that you guys were both on the trip together? I would imagine that you saw him at the finale. Did anything ever improve?
No, I never want to see him again in my life. And guess what? He didn't go. He did something special.
Yes.
And it's not up to me to say it, but he was not at reunion night. And no, this is a person.
I forgot about that.
A part of the game is the game. I get that. It's just a game. But you cross the line and you got evil. And even, for instance, for the night of tribal council, if you really, really thought I was going home, why would you be so ugly?
Mm-hmm.
It just was outrageous to me. And it was above the pale, beyond the pale. And so guess what? No, I never have to see him again ever in life. And I'm fine. If I happen to see him, that's cool too, because I'm not harboring any hatred or anything, because that's not in me to really hate people. But he's just not my cup of tea, and he's not somebody I would really jive with. And so goodbye.
Okay. So you accomplished your mission and you got rid of Jay, and then we get to the swap. Now, was there damage that was already done at that point that
Absolutely.
Affected you moving forward? Yes.
Absolutely. That's the whole point. My game kind of took a nosedive based on his activity and my reaction to his activity. I'm a strategic thinker. I like to think I am. So even with Natalia, I went to Natalia twice and I said, look, nobody's going to put you and I together. Let's squash this. Let's be each other's allies rather than each other's enemies. Because I'm telling you, I already know. I've seen you from a distance talk crap about me. And I know for a fact you and I can make it together. She couldn't embrace it. Mm-hmm. She just didn't trust the fact that I would be able to put it away. I said, girl, I washed your socks. I'm good with this. Let's move on. So I went to her twice. And yeah. she couldn't see it, so it didn't happen. I think the relationship, everybody loves Natalia. She's really a funny, cute, energetic, adorable person. She really is. She could be a little bit of a mean girl, and that's what you saw out there on the island. So everybody kind of gyrates around Natalia, and it's still to this day, they adore Natalia, and so do I. She's really a cool person. And so because Natalia started, I don't like Natalie and I don't care and blah, blah, blah. That was all Jay needed to take up the charge. And then everybody liked him because he was he kept the laughter going. He was very funny guy. And I give him that. So he kept a lot of the humor going. And so you have these two teaming up against me and I'm already, you know, standing out. So it became a bit of a snowball. That's why Mike didn't care for me, because he adored Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pissed that they took Jay out rather than me. He never recovered from that. We had one little bump, and all of a sudden he wants me out. But that's the thing too. Angelina had the control, and I knew that. So when I got voted out that night, I know damn well it ain't Mike, because it's not going to move without Angelina's assistance. Mm-hmm. So Mike has no way to bring a coup on me with Nick and Lyrsa. So even though I didn't articulate it that night, that's very clear in my mind that Angelina had something to do with it, and she had to support it, because Mike had no backbone, please. I'm sorry, it still doesn't, in my opinion, but that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch that one. I know.
You know, but age is a funny thing. Somebody asked the traits. They said I named the number of traits that worked against me pregame, and are those same traits that work against me in real life? And I'm like,
Let me give you that question. Yeah, Andrea asks, I thought in First One Out with Josh, it was very meta of Natalie to point out that she had a lot of factors working against her in the game and working towards her to being the first boot, including the fact she's a woman, older than many in the cast, and a person of color. After playing, do you have a different view of those traits and how they work against somebody in the game of Survivor? I'd really love to hear you speak more about this issue, and it's something that we see play a role in a lot of the seasons.
Well, you know what? The traits that worked against me pregame are the same traits that sometimes work against me in real life. Now, I said something similar to that pregame, and someone said, I pull the race card. Well, I don't see it that way. I have always did whatever I wanted to do without fear of people who are so ignorant that they lump entire groups of people together because they have some similarity. Rather that be grouping all Blacks or Latinas, members of the LGBT community, older people, whatever. They hate them on the basis of the group they've looped them into, rather than who they are, their character, their contributions. So look at the history of Blacks in America, in fact, across the world, and couple that with the political climate we're dealing with today in our country, the biases, the bigotry, the institutional racism, it's an absolute loss. Mm-hmm. So I don't flow my role for anybody who comes to the table with that kind of mentality. I might roll over your ass. So I don't slow down because people have this silly, ignorant hatred in their heart. And that sounds real deep and real serious. I'm saying, as it relates to the game of Survivor, it's the same folks that are here in the community. We just happen to be stranded on the island together without sleep and food. So it makes it worse. It exasperates the situation. So, yeah. On the age thing, a funny thing happened out there on age. Mike was expressing a concern because he kept saying, well, they think I'm the oldest. Well, they know I'm the oldest here and I'm feeling the pressure and I'm scared because they're going to target me because I'm the oldest. Mike kept going on and on. So I was planning on not sharing my age. Somebody asked a while ago, why did she go against that strategy? Well, I shared with Mike because Mike was so nervous about his age. And I said, Mike, look, between you and I, you're not the oldest out here. Yeah, I'm the oldest. No, Mike, you're not. Yeah, I'm 48, Natalie. And I said, yeah, Mike, I was too. And he said, you're older than 48. So we went through all of that.
Yeah.
I told him I'm like a few years older than you. That's me trying to build a bond with Mike, right? Let's just keep that between ourselves and let's work together, blah, blah, blah. What does Mike do within 24 hours? Allison is saying, well, let's all line up by age. Let the oldest go first. So, Mike, you go first. And then everybody said, yeah, Mike, you go first. Mike said, no, I'm not going to go first. And everybody said, Mike, it's nothing to be ashamed of. You're the oldest. Go first. He said, well, why does everybody think I'm the oldest? And Mike sat there and said, well, Natalie is actually older than me.
Mm-hmm.
She's like 10 years older than me. I'm like, what the f-? So the fact is at least four of the Goliaths parents are my age, either exactly my age or a year or so younger or older. Well, hello. Sometimes our parents can be a little worrisome, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're like, oh, mom, dad, come on now. They can kind of get on our nerve. Well, that is somewhat how I became out there, not deliberately, because I think I kind of try to keep up for the most part. But yeah, sometimes I felt like I was being discarded as the older parent once they found out my age. Because before, they were thinking, again, Mike was the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
So I helped him out a couple of times. He had no sense of regard for that. And, you know, I even got the claim of being lazy. Let me tell you, I'm pissed about that because I worked my butt off every day around camp, every single day. I cleared the campgrounds on most day to keep it clean and tidy. I went digging for food, you know, and all that. You know, dirt all across campus trying to find roots and tubers. I was busy every single day. So it annoyed the heck out of me when people were saying that I was lazy, didn't do nothing and boss people around. And even with that last fire, they plead how to do a fire. When the Jebini was on the island alone, not one of them knew how to start a fire.
Mm-hmm.
I should have never showed them because I showed them how to start the fire and I got voted out the next damn night.
Yeah. How did you know this?
How do I know what?
How to start a fire.
Because I practice on it and I've been camping before. So fires weren't hard for me. I started a fire even during my audition video. I put a fire together like in, it was under a minute. And so I don't even know what the big deal is about starting a fire. I'm like, what's wrong with these people?
Yeah.
So I was able to start a fire like really quickly, even out there. Sometimes I would go pop, 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 pop. And with 20, 30 seconds, I had a fire.
Yeah.
So somebody asked a question about what were some of the things that wasn't shown. That's one of the things that wasn't shown. There was a point. There were so many moments out there that were really good moments where it was funny. It was fun. We, had good relationship or good rapport. None of that was really shown out there whose name I won't mention.
Mm-hmm.
He cried on my shoulder more than the law allowed. Never saw me in any kind of mom role, right?
Right.
Because that's not the moment that they're trying to show. So there were some nurturing moments. There was some fearlessness that I showed out there that didn't get aired during the cyclone, during both cyclones. Mm-hmm. And I won't go into any details on that, but I was the solid one standing during the cyclones for both counts. And because the Goliath campground had such a meltdown, that wasn't shown. Mm-hmm. And I get that because they can't possibly show everything, nor do they want to.
Mm-hmm. Natalie, I have to ask you about this Jubani tribe because it ended up being such a big factor in the game, ultimately, where the final three ends up being all these people that you're on this swap tribe with, that those three people that go on to the merge, that they end up getting back together or staying together, however you want to look at it, and they end up being the final three. So I really am fascinated to know, and these are three people that you've had a interesting relationship with. If you were on that jury, Aaron Paulson asks us, who would you have voted for to win the game out of that final three?
I would have definitely voted for Nick because, okay. And I've said this, I've put that out there because I knew that Angelina had crossed me. People think Angelina tried to help me. They think I'm evil for not leaving the jacket. Angelina couldn't get my jacket today. Okay. I've had plenty of time to think about it. There's no way she's getting my jacket because, again, I feel like she's got the power behind that vote because Mike didn't have the power. Okay. Angelina has the power. And you know what? I'm not totally going to trash Angelina because I do think she played a very strategic game. But yeah, she couldn't get my vote because this is where it comes down to. A significant reason, a significant weight of why I was voted out was the jacket. Yeah, you could say you already helped me with not being voted out the first time. No, babe, you helped yourself because I positioned that where you knew it was the right move for you to take out Jay because it was going to help things in terms of the vicious rumor he put out there. So you helped yourself. And in the meantime, because see, Angelina doesn't do anything that doesn't help Angelina. Be real clear about that. So in the meantime, on the periphery, I benefited as well. Cool. So when she tried to wrap up all the jackets saying we had all agreed to leave our jackets at the campground. She told you that. Mm-hmm. No, you agreed that you were going to go wrap up my jacket and Lyris's jacket and leave it at the campground. I never agreed to that because guess what? I'm nobody's mark. You know, mm-hmm. I'm coming up from South Central L.A., trust me, I see you coming before you get here. So when she had my jacket wrapped up, I was giggling to myself about the fact that she thought I was leaving my jacket in camp. And that told me, too. So there were little signs that I'm the hit tonight because why is she trying to wrap up my jacket?
Yeah.
So when the two votes came down, I knew she had to cross me. So people who think Angelina had my back, you should never apply for Survivor because you don't get the strategy behind that girl's mind. And she definitely thinks strategically and they didn't see what I could see. And I could feel it. See, I have this discernment. I could feel what was going on. When she got up to hug me, it was the worst thing that she could do because I could feel it. Mm-hmm. So I would have had more respect had she said, look, it's you tonight. I'm going to fight my ass off to get it turned around. It's Mike, but blah, blah, blah. But if it doesn't work, can I get that jacket? I could have respected that.
Yeah.
That's not what I heard. So, yeah, Nick, Kentucky Nick, even though here's my mistake in the game. This was one of my biggest glares. By the time Nick and Lyris are entered, I should have reached out and made it a more of a deliberate point to develop a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. I have to admit, I missed that mark big time.
Yeah.
And so had I done that, I maybe could have survived it. But guess what? You had Angelina and Mike on the sideline saying, oh, she's been such a problem and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, that's Mike could have never got my vote. I was shocked he got any votes because Mike did nothing the entire time we were out there. The first half, Mike was lazy, sneaky, sneaking off looking for idols. I never saw him work.
Yeah.
I never saw him work.
You told him. So, you told him, hey, they're talking about you.
Yeah, I did. I helped Mike at least three times. And so he was sneaky and untrustworthy. And, you know, what can I say?
Yeah.
That's my thinking about that. Nick.
Mike says that he intentionally wanted to put out the vibe that he didn't know what he was doing so he could be under the radar.
Right.
That was something that he said in the final tribal council. Like he would lose his water on purpose and then make it seem like that he was somebody that they didn't have to worry about.
Well, it worked. It worked. Somebody asked me about napalm. If I use that outside of Survivor, napalm was born out of necessity. I had never even thought about it until the moment it rolled off of my lips. And no, I don't use it. Every now and then I'll send somebody something funny and I'll sign off napalm. But yeah, I'm not really using it outside of the game of Survivor.
So you never said that before you went on Survivor? That was just something that occurred to you and you said, okay.
At that moment.
Yeah.
Nope. Never used it. In fact, what I said in the final tribal council, somebody asked about that. Did I have something developed for each person? I didn't really know what I was going to say in that tribal council until Jay acted so ugly that as I was walking up the stairs, I was developing what I would say. And the whole comment about his skin, I own a skincare line. And so a part of my thing is always about skin, you know, get your skin together and you look younger and blah, blah, blah. So I had complimented him. The first thing I said to him when he and I ever spoke was that you have beautiful skin. So that your skin is gorgeous, darling, was a dig because, I got you. And what did Sean Richter say? Bet on black. Well, you got black on black, but I got you. Yeah. And then I want to talk about, I thought about Rudy. Rudy had this gruff, cantankerous, I won't describe fully what I thought his attitude was, but people love Rudy.
Mm-hmm.
Me too. He kind of reminded me of an Archie Bunker type in some regards.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Rudy as well. But when a woman comes forward and might be a little bit more gruff and direct and, you know, don't really hold their tongue, we get a whole different reception or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Because I do feel like that there have been some women, but I wonder if it's like an age thing of like that if you are like a full on grandma, then it's a little more accepted. But a younger woman, then they get labeled as being more of a she's bossy or she's a bitch on the show. But maybe there's like a point where when you become a full on, you know, grandma on the show that people think that's a little more funny.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm not a grandma in real life. My kids don't have babies, and I don't have a grandma mentality, and I don't have the energy of a grandma. So I don't really characterize myself in any form or fashion as a grandma yet. So I don't know why people would expect me to take on that kind of persona. That's just not me. But I do know that women who are very direct, upfront, clearly directed, decisive, you know, we move really quickly, we think we can multitask, and in some regards we can, you know, it's not the best thing to do obviously, but we do that too. We do it better than most men. Anyway, we get run the hell over just by doing great, by being forceful, by being direct, by being clearly directed and being capable of telling people, that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
So it is what it is. Again, that's a societal thing that women, you know, historically took a second seat or a back seat. And in a lot of people's minds, they think that that's where it should be today.
Natalie, you mentioned, you know, Sean Richter and Rudy, and I know you have been watching the show the whole way through, and you said earlier that it was your dream to be on the show. What is it about Survivor that was such a dream for you to go out there and pursue this?
Well, I love the show, and again, I love doing whatever it is I want to do, whether you understand it or not. Whatever goal that I set for myself, I'm really about establishing goals. I'll speak stuff out into the universe so the universe will help me line it up. And that's kind of what I did with Survivor. So I wanted to be out there because Survivor reminded me so very much of my climb from South Central Los Angeles, mm-hmm. of my climb through corporate America, and many of the characters that you see out there in the gameplay and the behavior and the mentality is exactly what you see as you're climbing to whatever, you know, mountaintop you're climbing to. And so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to be able to do that in that kind of environment? Beautiful backdrop, coupled with the ability of not, or the lack of ability to eat. I really couldn't sleep. First 5 days, I got really no sleep. They can tell you, they'd wake up, I'd be sitting straight up. It was just horrible for me. But it also gave me a moment to disconnect from all the stuff. We have all these daily distractions, and mm-hmm. I call them noise. And it's just staying focused on stuff is so difficult today, and being digitally disconnected and to have that ability to have that quiet time. I went parasailing once, and I've went a couple of times since then, but the very first time I went parasailing, one thing that was very shocking. Have you ever gone?
Parasailing? No.
Wrong. Yeah. One thing that was very shocking is as I was being lifted into the air, it was a boat, you know, in the water, and they were speeding off, and it lifted me up in the air. And as I got to a certain height, I was enveloped in silence, complete silence. Mm-hmm. That was so shocking to me when it happened. Of course it would, but I just didn't expect it. And to be floating in the air with that absolute silence was absolutely magnificent to me. And I thought, damn it, birds have got it going on. Because seriously, Rob, it's so beautiful. And so I found that same kind of moment on the island, particularly at night when I was asleep on the beach, and I pretty much slept on the beach alone. Mike was over on one end, I was on another end. But all I could hear was the waves and these birds at night. And that was absolutely glorious. Looking up at the stars and feeling that sense of isolation and peace and quiet. So I had some real spiritual moments out there as well that are very memorable.
Yeah. That part sounds really good. I have to be honest. I played Survivor, you know, a million years ago before there were like text messages and like push alerts and all this stuff. And that part of it sounds fun. Of not having that, of being like, I'm off the grid.
Yeah, off the grid. And then I love the fact, too, of, see, discipline is important. And that's what that represents for me as well, to be, have that mental fortitude to laser beam focus into another region almost, and just be really focused on that dot on the wall, so to speak, and all that noise, distraction, and everything else that always matters each day kind of goes away. Mm-hmm. I love that moment of having that kind of space, because my life is, let's face it, very, very, very noisy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not complaining about it, because guess what? It's about what I've created. And sometimes I could really have nothing to do on some days, but I don't let that be, because I always develop a new project, a new goal. Someone asked about how I became a Goliath, and I mentioned goals before. It's really about, for me, developing a personal mission statement, which I did decades ago. I had all kinds of goals and plans and projects. And then I developed that focus. See, a lot of us fail to focus. We try to do everything at once. It's really about picking out your top five or six things, narrowing it down to the one that you're going to focus on, and giving it your undivided attention, ignoring everything else other than that task at hand. Mm-hmm. And it's taken me a while to get that down to a science, because I really am a recovering multitasker.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of us can multitask, but we cannot really focus and concentrate on any more than one complex thing at a time. And so all this switching back and forth that we do, it's an opportunity loss. It's a switching cost when that happens. And we open ourselves up to more errors, and then we produce stuff that's less than quality. So there's a number of things that we can do to be successful. But I think that is a big piece to my secret sauce as to how I became a Goliath.
Natalie, this is such great stuff. And I didn't expect to get into this today with you. But yeah, I totally agree. And yeah, there is, that cost that people think that they can do a lot of different things at once. And it's a fallacy that we are, people actually can't. You're actually getting worse at all the things you're trying to do at once. But it's tempting because you feel like you're being more productive. But when I am at my best, it's when I'm, being able to, to work and give my undivided attention to just one thing and really get into, and you get out of that flow state when you're working on all these different things at once. And it's so difficult to do, but you're absolutely right about that's the way that you accomplish anything.
Yeah. And my daughter reminded me of that recently because there's a lot of science that backs this, but I sent her a text message about, a month or two ago. And I said, I have so much to do and so little time to get it all accomplished. And she responded to me, do your to-do list, prioritize it, and get to it. And then she said, on her second text, she said, the research of multitasking shows that it's ineffective. So just focus on that one item at a time. So she couldn't have hit the nail on the head any more precisely. And I knew she was right. And I like to take a little credit that she understands the importance of one, creating the list. But I had allowed myself to fall into the trap of simultaneously working on several things and some of the things I prefer to do over others. So I would deliberately choose to work on some lower level, something that was easier and more enjoyable rather than the stuff that needed to have my attention at that point. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a little bit of this, a little bit of that, working around, bouncing around, something I could finish quickly. So I'll do that. I did that for several months and I was content with just marking off, deleting items from my list, but it was a false sense of meaningful productivity because the big complicated stuff that should have been my focus was either sitting dormant or, only had some preliminary steps applied. So that whole goal thing, and I say that because I know a lot of your listeners are younger than myself, it's really about understanding what it is you want. And I know that's complicated, right? Because, we want so much and we can't focus and figure out what it is. So it's going to take looking in the mirror and being really honest with yourself. What are your strengths and weaknesses? Shoring up those weaknesses. And then figure out what do you need to bring it all together? If you have a goal of X, Y, and Z, what is it going to take to get there? And then focus on that. If your friends are partying and hanging out and doing whatever, let them do that. You stay laser beam focused on whatever it is that's going to take you to get to that next piece of your goal.
Wow. Natalie, this is fantastic.
I'm sorry. I'm lecturing this morning.
No, this is great. I mean, look, it's the survivor stuff is fun, but we're talking about big stuff here.
Yeah, it is. It's important to me. And I actually do. I write from time to time. I have a couple of ebooks, and this is the kind of stuff that I like to talk about. I can sleep this stuff. I love it because really, when you think about it, Rob, I went from zero net worth to just over $1 million mm-hmm. in my 20s, coming out of hailing, I'll say, from South Central LA. Nothing happens by mistake. It was all very deliberate. And I put a plan together to make it happen because there was a lot of stuff, Rob, that my family, stuff that maybe many of your listeners get at home. I didn't get at home. I had a great family. I learned a lot of the foundational and the basic stuff, but there was some deeper stuff that I realized that I was missing. And it took me a minute to figure out that there are certain things my family couldn't teach me. And so how do I get out there and get it? And so there are people who struggle with that all the time. And you rarely hear anybody talk about that. There are people that are struggling and clearly dysfunctional families that are just really quite horrific in terms of developing people. And these people don't know where to go or who to turn to. And it's really about finding that inner strength and focusing in on what you want for your life as you go forward.
How did you know what to do?
You know, Rob, I got exposed, believe it or not, when I was in the sixth grade, I asked my mother for a typewriter for Christmas. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't dare ask at the time of the year because we couldn't afford it. But she bought me that typewriter. It was a little manual typewriter, didn't even plug in, for Christmas. And I learned how to type. And what was incredible and shocking was as I was typing, the book that she bought, which was a book to learn how to type, it had so many things that I was so unaware of and unexposed to, Rob, that I was shocked that people live that way. And that's when I realized there's a bigger world out there that I don't even know about. Sixth grade. So I decided when I got to junior high school, which started at the seventh grade back then, I was going to take typing and I was going to continue. I started really enjoying the typing class for the lessons. There were always lessons within the lessons of exposure of things that I was unaware of. And that, so the seventh grade, sixth grade really started my inquisitive nature about what's outside of this bubble that I know as South Central Los Angeles. And there was so much. And that allowed me to also understand how to set goals and how to, you know, research different things. I mean, it was incredible. And the seventh grade, I got deep. Because again, it was a rude awakening to me. It was a shock that there were things that I had never been exposed to, that I learned. The typewriter book saved my life. Wow, it was the start of saving my life, really. Because, you know, when you live around people, see, South Central LA is, it's been troubled. I grew up in the turbulent 70s. Lots of drugs, gangs, drive-by shootings were just jumping off. And people are, there's a, the environment loomed, the community, that is, was very dysfunctional. And there was a looming hopelessness because lack of jobs, teen pregnancy. There were so many high school dropouts, people not finishing school. So when you look around and you see all of that, but you know, my parents said, just because you live in the ghetto does not mean the ghetto have to live in you. Rise above it. That I took to heart. And I did rise above it. But it was a long battle. It was a lot of work, and there was a lot of, you know, it was a lot of fighting on the way. You know, and I'm from a family. There's seven of us siblings, and so, yeah, my siblings really taught me that whole unity, loyalty, trustworthiness. You know, being transparent, being authentic. My family has been incredible in that regard. And if there was a fight, we damn near showed up as a team. Because there's seven of us. But it's all good. It's all good because guess what? The bottom line is I learned a lot about what to do and a lot about what not to do from my family. And many of the deeper lessons I learned in my books. And because I was broke, I had to work. I generally always had a job, a side job, two jobs, a you know, side hustle. I always still even have a side hustle today. Like I said, my core business is the media, but I have a side hustle for my natural and organic skincare line, which does well. It's an e-commerce business and I'm happy for it, you know? So anyway, I am totally, totally, totally on a tangent here, Rob.
Yeah, no, and, but this was great. This is really great stuff. And I'm so happy that you shared all that stuff that I don't know if you can tell through the podcast, but I'm just, you know, I'm smiling ear to ear hearing about your story.
Yes, because they I don't think any of my story was on air. I mean, anything that I shared that was out, you know, while I was out there, I don't think it made the air. So, you know, I'm happy to share, but there's certain things, obviously, I don't want to, you know, piss anybody off at CBS or Jeff or any of those, you know, producers. But there's I still love the show. What can I say? And I'm looking forward to next week. This week, actually, I guess it's going to be Wednesday. And people have asked who I'm rooting for. I really can't say as far as the new people are concerned, but the returning players, I have loved Aubrey from the day she hit the screen. So, and I like David too. David was funny and had this major growth arc. So, and Joe is cool too. Oh, and I do like Kelly. See, it's going to be difficult, but I'm telling you, Aubrey, I really have really appreciated Aubrey. I'm going to say Aubrey and Kelly.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily a girl thing. It's really about who they are as players, watching them over the years, their character. They've actually, you know, they're terrific. So I'm going to put Aubrey and Kelly up first. And the new people, if they have any sense about the game, they should get rid of all the returning players immediately.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah.
You're in over your head. Yeah, the girl with the blue hair.
Wendy.
Wendy. I don't know. She's a little, got a bunch of energy, but I don't know if it's directed. And then I saw a gentleman that just, I don't know. I'll tell you, the person who, of the newbies that has a shot in my thinking, is Ron.
Okay, Ron Clark.
Yeah, Cool Hand Luke, Ron mm-hmm. Clark. Yeah, he has a shot.
All right. Well, Natalie, thank you for coming on and talking with us about all this. You know, I feel like that, you know, we talked about Survivor, but then we got into some, you know, some real important stuff. So I'm always thrilled when we get a chance to do that.
Thank you, Rob.
Okay. Natalie, you talked about a lot of stuff. If people want to, you know, follow what you're doing, check out your skincare. How do people find all your stuff?
Well, actually, I've been a little MIA on that. I do know that my link to my skincare is at that Natalie Cole Instagram account.
Okay.
I'm sorry. It's in my bio on my Instagram account, which is at that Natalie Cole. And I'm going to start put a website out that's at that Natalie Cole as well. It's about to be launched over the next month or so, mm-hmm. which is really about my ebooks and just things that I've been interested in and been writing about for some time now.
Okay.
I don't know if most people know, they probably don't. I'm co-authoring about three different books. So I'll have my books on the website and some of my ebooks, and people book me to schedule also through the website. So that will be up probably by next month.
Okay. All right. Natalie, now next time I really want to roll out the red carpet. I want to talk in person when we do the next one. I'll come to you. We could go to Podcast One Studios God forbid you want to go into the valley, you can come here. But the next time we talk about one of these things, I want to do in person.
Okay. I absolutely would love it.
Okay.
Especially if you have a hair and makeup person there, I'm there.
Let me see what my wife can do. But not that you need it.
Hey, does Nicole know about black hair?
I can't speak to what she knows and doesn't know.
Okay. But in person would work fine for me, Rob. I'm cool with that.
All right, Natalie, thank you so much, okay?
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Natalie Cole. Wow, I was blown away. I thought Natalie was really incredible on the podcast, so I'm really glad that we got a chance to do that. At first, I was like, what, another podcast this week? But yes, I'm so glad that we ended up doing it. Really, really strong end to the RHAP week this past week. Of course, we had everything with the Celebrity Big Brother. I really thought we had a great Celebrity Big Brother finale podcast on Wednesday night. And then in addition to that, Nicole and I posted our Survivor 38 preview, which was about 2.5 hours. I also had the return of the Love Know-It-Alls this week. News AF, I thought, was one of the best News AFs in a while as well. I'm sorry for being so hyperbolic, but I really just feel like this was a great week of podcasting. And then we surprised the world when we dropped the Bryce Isaiah First Look podcast, which also has a YouTube version where you can see exactly what Bryce Isaiah is doing. Bryce told us what he thinks about the new cast just by looking at their pictures, and gave us a sense of how people are going to do and who's going to win just by the cast photo, not reading anything from the bio, but reading everybody as we go through the Survivor 38 cast. We're also going to have Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast on the weekend as well, where Akiva and I are going to be taking on a challenger in a game of Jeopardy coming up this weekend. So just a jam-packed week of Rob's podcast. I'll also be on Monday night going to talk to Angie Kahn. So we're going to have character types as well as we get ready for the first week of Survivor coming up on Wednesday. If you happen to have not even listened to First One Out yet, also go ahead and check that out. That's available. Easy access on YouTube, robhaswebsite.com/FOOYouTube. Thanks so much to the patrons of Rob's Podcast who makes all of this podcasting possible. There's no other way that we could possibly do it. So thank you so much to the support of the patrons, 5 years strong. If you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, you can go to our Patreon profile. That's at robhasawebsite.com/patron. There's a whole video explaining why I even got involved with all of this podcasting about reality TV, plus all of the benefits of becoming a patron and being part of our Rob's Podcast patron community. That's at robhasawebsite.com/patron. Thank you guys so much. We will be back with much more coming up soon. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.